Chapter 5. I don't know how I'm doing it or where I'm finding the energy, but I soar through the air. It feels different from my telekinesis, like it's coming from somewhere else within me. I feel like I'm in some kind of trance as I shoot through clouds, focused only on looking for somewhere to crash that isn't water. It doesn't feel like too long before I see land. I picture myself on it. And like magic, I'm lowering until I'm bouncing on a beach, forming a little trench of sand. I'm too exhausted to properly react to the fact that I was just flying through the air. All I can wonder is where I am and hope that no one saw me. No such luck. A female jogger is by my side before I can climb out of the little ditch my body's made in the sand.
Holy crap! What happened?
I must look terrible, because when she gets a good look at me, she stops in the middle of her sentence. Water, I croak out, my throat feeling like it's full of dust. She pulls a bottle from her workout belt and hands it to me. I squeeze the cool liquid into my mouth, hardly stopping to savor it. My eyes are dry and stinging, but the water keeps coming, so I just keep swallowing. Careful, careful, the woman says. There's plenty more. I look around warily. I'm on a beach, but not one that I recognize. It's dawn, or just before. There's hardly any light out at all. My mind spins. Where am I? This doesn't look like any place I remember in Martinique. Loomis Park, the woman says. She's looking less worried about me now and more confused. Her eyes keep looking out at the sea in the direction I came from. No, what island is this? Her face wrinkles. This is South Beach. Miami? Miami? Where do you live? She asks me. Was there an accident? Do we need to call for help? How did you... I mean, it looked like you were flying. I'm quick to shake my head. No accident, I say between gulps. No help. Don't call anyone. A few people gather around us. People start asking if everything's okay. After downing the last of the water, I start to get to my feet, but my legs are wobbly. No, 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 the woman says. Stay right there. You need more water. She looks up at the handful of people gathered around us, and someone offers her a bottle full of bright green liquid. Perfect, she says, handing it to me. Drink this. It'll be good for you and help out with your electrolytes. I hesitate for only a second before I'm chugging the sweet liquid. My heart starts to pound, as if it's been paused for the last few moments. Something sparks in my mind, and I look around. I'm still wearing the glove with the sheathed blade, but I don't see anything else on the beach. My bag, I say, starting to get frantic. The chest may not have had anything I thought I could use in it, but Ray talked about it as if it was Lorien's last hope. Other than me and the rest of the guard, that is, there's no way I can lose it. It's the only thing I have left. A few yards away, I see a guy picking up my duffel bag. He tosses back the canvas flap and starts to pull out the Loric chest. Hey! I shout in the loudest voice I can muster. Before I can think about what I'm doing, I reach out my hand and feel a spark of telekinetic energy. The bag and chest fly from the man's hands and into mine. He's stunned, but it looks to everyone else like he's just tossed it over to me. I clutch it against my torso. Someone snaps a picture of me on their phone.
Hey!
The woman beside me stands up, sounding annoyed.
What are you trying to do, man?
This kid's obviously been through something, and you want to take pictures of him?
I thought we'd need pictures to run if it's a story, the photographer says. If this something is big, we need to document it.
They start to argue. I get up and start to run.
Hey!
Someone is shouting behind me. The woman, probably. But I don't look back. I just put my head down and make a beeline toward the closest bushes and trees. Anything that will give me cover.
My legs feel like jelly and my head pounds, but I keep going until I can't hear anyone yelling behind me anymore. It's been so long since I've been in real civilization that I've almost forgotten how to function. Clinging to my bag, I do everything wrong. I almost knock down a few people as I run with my eyes looking over my shoulder. I catch bits and pieces of curses as I pass.
Watch it, you little piece of...
Damned punk, I should...
The hell you think you're doing?
But I ignore all of them, running, suddenly desperate to get away from the people and the rest of the world. I come across another park, all lush lawns and palm trees, with a few rows of big shrubs. That's where I head. The sun is rising, and people are already starting to fill the beach 100 yards away, but I nestle down into the bushes until I'm as far out of sight as I can be. My body aches. My chapped lips burn. But at least I've gotten a little water. Ray's voice rings in my head, like some kind of taunting ghost. I know exactly what he'd say. This is what you wanted, isn't it? You're off your little island. You got what you asked for. Welcome back to the real world. I groan. It's all I have the strength to do. Then I close my eyes and slip into darkness. When I wake up, the sun is starting to go down. I've slept through the entire day, but I'm better for it. I'm still weak getting to my feet, but I don't feel like I'm immediately going to collapse. What I do feel is hunger. So much hunger that my stomach cramps at just the thought of food. I have to find something to eat. I take a quick stock of everything I own. Dirty linen shirt, cargo shorts, sandals that are about to fall apart, and a duffel bag that holds an alien chest. It's not a lot to work with, but I've also got telekinetic powers. And flight. I wonder briefly if the flying has to do with my telekinesis, or if it's something different altogether. I'm anxious to try it out again, but my stomach twists, and I know I'm not doing anything unless I get some food in me. I find a water fountain in the park and drink until I feel like I'm going to burst, but it doesn't really help that much with the hunger pangs. In the near distance are buildings and lights, and I head in that direction. If there are lights, there are probably people, and if there are people, there's probably food. It doesn't take long before a sweet smell invades my nose. It smells like food I remember eating at a carnival in the Caribbean before we went off the grid. I follow it through a few streets as the buildings get bigger and the lights get brighter, keeping to the shadows as best as I can. People pass me by, but they don't pay me any mind. In fact, it looks like they're purposefully avoiding the sight of me, probably because I look like a homeless person, and the last thing they want ruining their night is to have to talk to some destitute kid. Perfect. And then I find it. A street fair or carnival or whatever it is they call it here in Miami. The road is blocked off and swarming with people, but more importantly, it's packed with food trucks and little stalls selling what look like crepes and burritos and tacos. It feels like all the blood in my body is rushing to my head. People. Everywhere. After so long on the little isolated island, it's intimidating to see such crowds. Calm down, I tell myself. Just take this one step at a time. I grab a seat on steps leading up to yet another little park. It's as if they can't get enough of them in this city, and start to stake out my options. I could use my powers to float a taco over to myself, but the stands are small and the food is being watched. Besides, Ray was always our cook, so I don't even know what half the things I'm seeing are. I realize how terribly unprepared I am to be back in the real world. I should have planned better. I thought I'd show up in Martinique with a boat, something to trade. I don't have any money, not even a penny. Just my chest. And my legacies. My stomach twists again with hunger, and I realize what I'm going to have to do. Steal. Use my telekinesis to lift some cash off someone down here. Somewhere in the back of my head, an alarm is going off. This is an abuse of your legacy. But I ignore it I'm starving.
I'll worry about paying the people back later. My eyes scan the crowd. There's a group of people standing nearby. They're well-dressed in suits and dresses and polished shoes. They definitely look like they could afford to lose a few bucks. It takes me several tries. The first few times I tug at someone's wallet, they reach to their back pocket to make sure it's still there. But eventually a leather billfold slips out, and I quickly shoot it into the bushes. I don't move yet, but count backwards from 100, watching to see if the guy notices his wallet's missing or not. As if on cue, my stomach makes a terrible gurgling noise when I get to 1. I stroll casually over to the bushes and retrieve the man's wallet. It's packed with cash. I grin, shove the bills into my pocket, and then head for the food stalls. I stop at the first one I see. It's some kind of Cuban food, and I end up with a greasy sandwich of pork and cheese that drips all over my hands when I bite into it. It's the best thing I've ever tasted. When it's gone, I move on to tacos, then ice cream. My stomach is filled up quickly, but I push through and keep eating. I'm halfway through my ice cream when I realize someone's watching me. A policeman. I casually walk away, and he, less than casually, follows me from a distance. I glance over my shoulder just long enough to see him tap something into his cell phone, his eyes never leaving me. It's possible he just thinks I'm trouble based on how destitute I look, but it's equally possible that after I ran away from the beach this morning, whoever it was that snapped a picture of me reported me to the police. I can't take that chance. I make a beeline for a side street. Once I'm around the corner, I start running. The last thing I need is for an officer to start questioning me, or report me, or worse, try to take me into custody. Then I'd have to make a scene and use my powers and probably alert half the Mogadorian army to my presence. No, I just have to get away. I immediately regret eating so much food. It sits inside my stomach like a pile of bricks, and I feel like I'm going to vomit after just a few blocks of jogging. Over my shoulder, I see that the officer is keeping up with me. When I duck into an alleyway, I hear his footsteps turn into a run somewhere behind me. Go, 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 I shout at myself in my head. And I'm running as best I can through the alleys and across a side street and behind a huge building and past some fences, and then the alleyway dead ends. And I'm screwed. Or at least, I will be screwed if I don't figure out this new flying thing. It's not like I know how to make it happen. I stare up at the roof 10 stories above me. I have to get up there. And so I clench all my muscles and envision myself floating up. And suddenly, I'm not just floating, but shooting up into the air. I go way past the top of the building as my heart pounds. And for a moment, I can see out over the ocean for what looks like forever. Then I try to calm down and gently float back to the top of the roof. I land with a bit of a thud, but it's not bad for my second conscious attempt at getting out of the sky. Certainly better than crash landing onto the beach. I'm basically an alien superhero. I peek over the edge of the building. The cop is standing in the alleyway looking puzzled. 2 more people soon join him there, though only one of them is in uniform. The other's just wearing a suit, from what I can tell. They're too far away to make out any specifics. After looking around for a while, they disappear. I sink down and lean against the waist-high bricks at the edge of the roof. I can sleep here tonight. The air is cool, and I doubt anyone will bother me. I pull the leftover money from my pocket and count it. It's not much, but it'll get me through the next few days while I figure out what to do next. Then, I'm weirdly relieved to find the old red rubber ball in my pocket as well. I stare at the stars while I roll it over the backs of my knuckles. It's kind of strange that they're the same stars as the ones I used to see from the island. When I look at the sky, it's almost like I never left. For the millionth time in my life, I wonder if any of the stars I'm seeing are Lorien's sun. When we were on the run,
Moving through Canada after that Moog found us outside of Montreal, we always slept in shifts. That's what we called them, at least. In actuality, Ray would stay most of the night watching over me. My shift would just be the few minutes in the morning while Ray showered or went to get us food or something. Even in our shack, I think sometimes he'd stay up half the night by the door if he had a feeling or hunch that something would happen. I'd always kind of laughed it off as paranoia, but now, alone on the rooftop of a building in a town I've never been in, I wish more than anything that I had someone to look out for me. Chapter 6. I make a home for myself in South Beach. I don't have a roof over my head or anything, but I get familiar enough with the little area that it starts to feel like I know it, at least. Clubs, restaurants, and hotels line the beaches, and from the sidewalks I can see inside, into other worlds that seem so detached from what I grew up with that they're completely alien to me. There are flashing lights and bands and dancers that spill out into the street. In Martinique, I'd seen carnivals and festivals that had dancers, but never anything quite like this. Ray had always made sure I was kept inside after dark. But now, alone, I'm free to wander. I think about heading up towards Canada, but I'm still weak from the voyage. Besides, I need to practice the hell out of flying before I even begin to think of flying all the way there, which seems like the easiest way to avoid any issues with Border Patrol or police. At first, it's hard for me to fly without a rush of adrenaline or a near-death experience. I can't seem to figure out where the power comes from. But over the course of a week or two, I get better. Levitating just a few inches off the ground at first, then rising into the air as high as I can before I get freaked out and come falling back to the ground. Sometimes, when it's extra dark, I fly over the ocean, low enough that no one will see me, darting between buoys. I'm getting good at it. The rooftops serve as my bed at night. They feel safer than sleeping on the beach or in alleys. During the daytime, I get really good at picking pockets with my telekinesis. I stop feeling bad about it after the second or third time. I'm surviving. If I'm going to make it to Canada or anywhere else, I'm going to need plenty of cash and supplies. And there are countless targets walking in droves in and out of expensive-looking shops all over the island. I buy a new set of clothes. Jeans to cover the scars of 1 and 2 on my ankle. And keep a few other fresh shirts in my bag. In my clean t-shirt, and with a wad of cash in my pocket, I'm just another kid in Miami whose parents have given him too much allowance. I stay careful when it comes to my powers. They could easily give me away. That and my bulky, heavy chest, which I carry with me everywhere I go. I think about the guard quite a bit at first. About maybe seeking them out and trying to find them. But how would I even go about doing that? Post missing ads or something? For all I know, they could be in shacks in Africa or Indonesia or Antarctica. And if they're not, if they're banding together, well, no one ever came to find me. So I think of them less and less. Every time I discover something new about the city, part of me curses Ray. We could have been doing this all the time instead of being stuck in the middle of nowhere. I spend my days exploring, or playing in arcades, or reading books on the beach, doing all the things I didn't get a chance to do on our island, where there were no bookstores or electrical outlets. I feel like I could probably play video games or watch movies forever. I eat up all the stories. I wish I could create them myself. I make up for lost time. I know what Ray would say. He'd call me lazy. He'd trot out parables about ants and grasshoppers. But I refuse to feel bad about actually living my life for once instead of cowering in fear. It's almost too easy here. I get comfortable, maybe even careless. And that's how she finds me. Normally any wallets I lift go straight into my duffel bag, and I go through them later when it's dark and I'm not in a crowded area. I'm hungry and low on cash and end up leaning against a palm tree on a nice quiet section of beach. I'm rifling through my haul when she speaks from behind me. You're just looking to get busted, aren't you?
I flinch and twist around, pulling my bag closer to me as I get a good look at the person this high, slightly raspy voice has come from. She looks like she's a few years older than me, with deeply tanned skin and shiny black hair that's pulled back in a ponytail. She's wearing a lot of dark eye makeup and a gray tank top over cut-off jean shorts. I stammer the beginnings of a few words and scramble to my feet. She laughs a little.
"Don't worry," she says with a shrug. "I've got enough reasons of my own to avoid the cops."
She stares at me with dark brown eyes, waiting for me to say something, but I don't know what to do. I've been avoiding people the whole time I've been here. Old habits. And no one's really gone out of their way to talk to me. But this girl seems nice.
"Okay, so do you not talk or something?" she asks. "What's your name?"
I open my mouth and then stop. It's a simple question, but of course I have no answer. At least, not one I can give her truthfully. So I think back to a person I liked being.
"Cody,"
I finally say. The name I used in Canada.
"Cody," she repeats. "It's nice to meet you, finally. I'm Emma."
Shit. What does she mean by finally? I stare at her face, analyzing it, looking for signs that she might be a Moog, ready to fight or fly at a moment's notice if it comes to that.
"Oh, please. I've seen you lurking around. It's impossible not to. I'm surprised the police haven't picked you up yet. You look totally sketch when you're on the prowl. It's crazy that you even get close enough to people to lift off them."
"Oh. Well, the good news is, she doesn't seem to notice that I'm able to pick pockets because of my legacy. The bad news is, apparently I'm not nearly as stealthy as I thought I was."
"No offense," she continues, squinting at me a little. "You don't talk much, do you?"
"I guess not," I say. "I've never really thought about it. I used to talk a lot when I was younger, and then it was just me and..." I don't know how to finish the sentence. Realize that I've said too much already. Luckily, Emma simply nods her head.
"You working for anyone?" she asks.
"No, it's only me," I say. Then I'm confused about what she's even asking.
"Wait, what do you mean?"
Stupid. I don't know why, but I'm slipping up. I haven't told her anything important, haven't even scratched the fucked up surface that is my past. But there's no reason I should be telling her anything. She just smiles and nods at my bag.
"Buy me an arepa, and maybe I'll tell you."
If Ray were here, we'd be fleeing. Gone. I wouldn't have even been given the chance to talk to Emma. But as much as I imagine Ray's voice shouting at me to excuse myself and blend in with the crowd and make a break for the nearest sparsely inhabited island, he's not actually here. Besides, I haven't talked to anyone in a long time. Not really. Maybe I'll learn something useful. And if anything goes wrong, and she leads me into a trap or something, I've got telekinetic powers and the ability to fly away. I'm practically untouchable.
"Okay,"
I say, forcing a little smile.
"What's an arepa?"
She takes me to a little food stand up the beach, and I order 2 arepas. When the cart owner tells me it'll be $6, Emma says something in Spanish, and the owner scowls.
$3,
he says, handing over 2 golden discs that shine in the sunlight. I pay, and we walk away. The beach is on one side of us, a row of luxury hotels on the other.
"What was that about?"
I ask. I bite into my arepa, which turns out to be one of the most delicious things I've ever eaten. Savory sweet corn cakes sandwiching melted white cheese. I'm in heaven. "Just keeping that guy from taking advantage of you," Emma says. "He thought you were a tourist."
"What did you tell him?"
"Just that I knew he was overcharging you." She pauses for a beat. "Maybe I mentioned my brother's name. He's kind of a big deal around here."
"What do you mean?"
I ask.
"Let's just say if you were lifting those wallets for someone, it'd probably be him."
What is he, like, a gangster?
Even as the words come out, I realize how dumb they sound. But my mind immediately went to a mob movie I caught the day before, when I'd spent half the waking hours in a theater. Cheese strings from my mouth to the golden half moon in my hand.
Something like that.
Emma looks at me and smirks. I feel stupid, like some kind of naive kid.
So, do you work for him?
I can't picture her as one of the femme fatales from the movies. She's too young, obviously, but also too friendly.
Is this the part where a black car drives up and I get shoved in and held for ransom or something?
I'd probably choose someone who wasn't picking pockets if I was going to try to get some kind of ransom money, she says with a little smirk.
No, I don't work for my brother.
I'm nothing like him. Don't even talk to him, really. Besides, the last thing I want is someone telling me what I can or can't do, especially if that someone is as stupid as my brother.
I smile, genuinely. I can kind of get where she's coming from.
Besides, she adds, he thinks I'm too young and that he doesn't want me involved. She lets out a long sigh between bites of her snack. Her mouth is half full when she speaks again.
So, where are you from?
Why are you talking to me? I ask, ignoring her question. She looks a little confused. I mean, why did you come talk to me on the beach?
I wanted an arepa.
Sure.
Okay, I saw you around and knew what you were doing. I figured you could use a few pointers. I thought maybe you'd be my new beach buddy. I'm tired of working alone.
Working? I ask. What do you mean? She stops in the middle of the sidewalk, grins, and then pulls a black leather billfold from her pocket. The first wallet I stole, the one I carry my cash around in now. My hand reaches to my back pocket and confirms what I already know. Somehow she's managed to snag my wallet. I never felt a thing.
Not everyone's as easy a mark as you, she says with a mischievous glint in her eyes. I could use a hand if you're up to it.
You want me to steal wallets for you?
With me.
I hesitate. Walking around and talking to Emma is one thing, but I can practically hear Ray yelling at me and telling me not to get close or make friends with anyone but him. But she's obviously not a moog.
Come on,
she says, sensing my reluctance.
Look, I don't know where you're from, but it's obvious you're not as familiar with this place as you should be if you were about to shell out $6 for some street food, even if it was delicious.
Let's meet up again and get into some trouble. I'm so bored this summer.
That's why I came and found you.
Her last words stand out to me. She sought me out, came and found me on the beach. The least I can do is consider hanging out with her a little more.
Sure, I say.
Her face lights up a little.
Great.
She pulls out her cell phone and grimaces at the screen.
Shit, I gotta go. What's your number?
I don't have one, I say a little sheepish.
What do you mean, you...
She starts, then her face falls a little.
Well, meet me on the beach tomorrow. Same place I found you today. I'll be down in the afternoon.
I nod.
Yeah, okay.
She flashes one more smile and tosses my wallet to me. I fumble with it, uncoordinated. By the time I have it back in my pocket, she's halfway to the street, disappearing into the throng of tourists.
Holy shit, I think. Did I just make a friend?
The realization that I'm not sure, because I've never had a friend in my life other than Ray, is crushing. How am I supposed to save a planet overrun with a warmongering species if I can't even figure out how to interact with other people? My thoughts flash to the other guard. What if I don't get along with them? Chapter 7. Instead of waiting for Emma in the spot where she snuck up on me yesterday, I stay half a beach away, loitering between some bathrooms and a thick line of plants. That way, I'll be able to see if she shows up with a Moog brigade or something, though I don't really think she's going to. I'm just trying to be cautious. and I don't want her to catch me by surprise again. Emma appears early in the afternoon. She looks around for me before shrugging and sitting underneath the palm tree where she found me. She waits for a while, 20 minutes maybe, as I try to talk myself into walking over. It's weird how nervous I feel. This is just so foreign to me, meeting up with someone, talking to someone new at all. I feel awkward. When she stands up and looks like she's going to leave, I grip my teeth and head her away. "Hey," she says with a grin when she catches sight of me. "I thought you were going to stand me up." "Sorry," I say, shoving my hands into my pockets. I lost track of time. "No problem. It's nice out today. Let's hang out here for a while." And so we sit and chat, where mostly she talks and I respond to questions as vaguely as I can, or with outright lies. Where am I from? Around. Where do I live? Not far from the beach. What about my parents or family? They're here and there. They travel a lot. I'm left to my own devices. I pick a pocket or two on occasion because I think it's fun. Emma doesn't press me about anything, which almost makes me feel bad for all the lies I tell her. That I've got a home to go to at night and a loving family somewhere. She's easy to talk to in a way that Ray never was. Mostly because she talks a lot about herself, and everything she says is new to me. Sometimes, she slips into Spanish and it sounds so pretty that I don't even point out to her that I can't understand her. Emma isn't at all the person she made herself out to be when we first met. So self-assured and street smart. As she talks, I can see the cracks begin to show. Her brother might be some kind of criminal guy, that much I think is true, but she's just a rebellious girl who has gotten good at sneaking things from other people, looking for some adventure during the summer. Emma really does have a loving family and a home to go back to every night. But from what I can tell, she's hungry to be a part of something, to get a taste of danger. It's funny. I never imagined people would actually go out looking for trouble or danger. I guess when you spend your life hiding from everything to keep something bad from happening, stuff like that loses its thrill. Still, when she suggests we go out and lift a few wallets or purses, I go along. I think of it as a game or training. Lying, hiding, stealth. These are all things that Ray would technically approve of, since they're skills that'll help keep me hidden away from the Moogs, right? I find out pretty quickly that I'm not the best thief when I'm not using my powers. I only have to be chased through the streets of South Beach once to figure that out. Emma can't see how I've made it so far without getting caught, but I just shrug. My role becomes that of the distraction. I'm the person who stops and asks for directions, or falls down in front of a mark while she picks their pocket. That I'm not terrible at. I'm basically just lying and telling stories. And before I know it, we have a system that works and are making a lot of money. At least, enough that I'm never hungry or wanting for much. With a little left over to put in my Canada fund. We get good at what we do. We make a code, a sort of Robin Hood pact. We steal only from those who look like they can afford to lose a few bucks. They're easy to spot, coming in and out of designer stores or hotels. We target tourists, not people who look like locals. We see each other most days. About a week after first meeting Emma, I ask her why she's into breaking the law and stealing from people. I've deduced by this point that she probably comes from a good enough home that she could just ask her parents for money or something. "Respect," she tells me as she tosses some woman's now empty wallet into a trash bin on the beach. "That's what I want. That's what we need. When people respect you, you can do anything. That's how you get real power in a city like this. Your name has to mean something to people." I want badly to tell her that my name does mean something to a lot of people. I'm a savior and a target. But the more time I spend with Emma, the less pressing these things seem, and the farther away Canada lies.
With her, I'm just a kid eating ice cream and street food every day, spending the afternoon sneaking into movie theaters and lazing around the beach at dusk. Over the course of a few weeks, Emma and I do get a reputation around the beaches, at least enough of one that Emma's brother hears about us and tells her to lay off before she gets into trouble. I can tell that the locals have changed the way they think about me just from how they look at us when we pass them by. Some with respect, some with a hint of fear, all of them with knowledge of who we are and what we can do. It feels good to be acknowledged. I carry my chest with me wherever I go, too scared to leave it hidden somewhere. It's all I have left of the island and of Ray, which both seem so far away now. At night, I sleep with it pulled close to me. It's in the moments between sleeping and waking that I find my thoughts drifting to my destiny and the rest of the guard, to the war and fighting that surely waits in my future. I dream that I never have to be five again, that I can do whatever I want, no longer bound by the destiny forced upon me by the elders of Lorien. But I know that's something I can't escape, not entirely. Either I'll fight alongside the guard, seven superpowered soldiers who've never met one another, trying to take down an entire army, or the Moogs will kill all of us and take Earth as well. I wish there was another way, a third option I'm not thinking of. But for the life of me, I can't think of one. I might as well enjoy my time on this planet while I can. One night, I spot the perfect target. Emma and I are hanging out behind one of the fancy hotels that back up to the beach, divvying up what we've taken throughout the day. It's nighttime, and the only people to bother us are a few late-night joggers who just nod to us as they pass us by. The Mark is in his mid-30s or so and well-dressed in a crisp black button-down shirt, gray pants and shiny black shoes that are impractical for a walk on the beach, even if he is keeping to the sidewalk. His dark hair is swept back and accentuates his pale skin, meaning he's almost certainly not from Miami, and, most importantly, he's alone. Perfect. He's practically begging us to lift his wallet. I glance at Emma, who gives me a mischievous grin, one I recognize easily by now.
"What's the story?" she asks.
"We lost our cat," I say. "It's black as night, and we've been looking for hours." She smiles and nods, backing away from me. This is what we do. I provide the story and she does the heavy lifting. As the man approaches, his eyes drift between the two of us, but he doesn't pay much attention. When he's past Emma, I step into his path. Emma positions herself behind him.
"Hey, mister, have you seen a black cat running around here? We've been trying to..."
The man moves fast. Faster than I would have thought. And in the blink of an eye, he's got Emma out beside him, her arm twisted in his grip. A red leather wallet falls from her fingers and bounces on the sidewalk. The man tightens his fingers around her, and Emma falls to the sand with a small cry. She lets out a string of curses in Spanish.
Shit.
I move forward, but he raises a hand to me, and there's a command about his presence that causes me to stop. I don't know what to do. He speaks to Emma in Spanish, saying something that makes her eyes go wide. She mutters back to him, and he responds. His voice is low and smooth. There's some kind of dawning recognition that sweeps over Emma's face. Clearly, she's putting things together that I don't understand. And I start to feel like I'm completely in the dark about what's actually happening in front of me. All I know is that I have one friend in the world right now, and she's on the ground in front of a man who she's obviously afraid of. So when he reaches for her, I can't help but react. I send him stumbling backwards with a telekinetic blast. The attack isn't much, more of a flinch of my legacy than anything, but it serves to put some distance between all of us. The man looks surprised for a moment and then narrows his eyes at me. I puff out my chest and clench my fists.
"Cody, what are you..."
Emma looks confused.
"Listen, I know who this guy is. Sort of.
The man bends down slowly, hands out in front of him, and picks his wallet up off the ground. He flicks two cards out from it. They land on the sidewalk.
If you're ever looking for work, call this number,
he says. Then, as if it's an afterthought, he tosses a $50 bill onto the ground as well. Then, he walks right past us, away, like he doesn't have a care in the world. There's something about him that permeates the air and makes him seem untouchable. When he's out of earshot, I turn to Emma.
Are you okay?
I ask, concerned.
You have no idea who that is, do you?
Emma asks, her eyes never leaving the man's back.
No. Who?
Emma picks up the two cards and holds one out to me. It's white, with nothing but a black phone number printed in the center of it.
His name is Ethan, she says. I've heard my brother talking about him lately. He's some big important guy who is shaking things up around the city now. Do you know what this means?
She stares at me, but I just shake my head. She grins.
He's our ticket to the next level.
Chapter 8. Emma calls. She doesn't talk to Ethan, but the person on the line seems to know who both she and I are. It makes me nervous, but it's only a fake name that they know. Ethan is apparently in dire need of couriers, people to run packages and documents across the city for him. It's not exactly what Emma had in mind when she called, but she agrees on behalf of both of us.
I thought you didn't want someone telling you what to do, I say, when she's off the phone. I don't,
she frowns a little bit.
But I'm getting bored lifting off of randos every day. Aren't you?
Not really, I think, but I just shrug.
So what? You're going to work your way up to master cat burglar or something?
I ask with a smirk. She punches me in the arm and laughs. We call in for our assignments. Usually they include picking up envelopes at specific stores or locations, and delivering them to stores on the other side of town. Emma hates it, but I don't mind. I get to see parts of the city I never knew existed. Voodoo shops in Little Haiti and chandeliers hanging in store windows in the design district. Sometimes we have to split up to get the work done. Mostly, we're running around the city together. One day on a solo assignment, I meet Ethan again. He sits in a big corner booth at the back of a restaurant. I have a package for him. The place is fancy, or at least fancier than the fast food and street vendor food that I usually eat. He grins widely when he sees me, flashing perfect white teeth.
There's my best worker, he says, motioning to the other side of the booth. Please, have a seat.
Thanks, I realize I don't know what to call him.
Please, call me Ethan.
Ethan, I nod. I plop down in the booth, setting my duffel down at my feet. Before I can say anything else, food starts arriving. Plates upon plates of ceviche and roasted chicken and pasta swimming in sauce. Ethan encourages me to eat as much as I want, and I practically shovel food into my mouth. Ethan talks while we eat.
I don't normally get my hands dirty with small-time crooks or gangs in this city,
he says, cutting into a shrimp on his plate.
But reports get back to me. From people on the streets, from cops. When someone of interest pops up, I know about it. And you and your friend are definitely people of interest. You had a solid partnership before you came across me. Tell me, what brought you to pickpocketing? Why do you do it?
To survive. Ethan smiles. He gestures to me with his fork.
You're young. About 14, I'd say, right?
I nod. He continues.
I lived on the streets when I was your age. It made me a damned good thief, and forced me to grow up fast. But it's not an easy life, and it's dangerous. My brother didn't make it.
His voice goes quieter. I freeze.
It feels inappropriate to keep eating while he's telling me about his dead brother, so I sit there with a huge chunk of cheese squirreled away in one of my cheeks as he keeps talking. I had to look for him for days before I finally found him. Another gang had, Well, it's not important. I don't want to scare you. More importantly, I see a lot of him in you. It's uncanny, really. I think he would have survived if he had your talents.
I tense up. As far as Ethan knows, my talents include delivering mail and taking wallets. I think back to when we met on the beach, and I stupidly pushed him with my telekinesis. Has he figured out what that was? No, I tell myself. He probably thinks it was the wind. How could he know? Yeah, I say. I'm sorry to hear about your brother.
It's all in the past, Ethan says. But you are the future.
Ethan's lips curl up in a smile.
Tell me more about yourself, he says.
And so I start talking. Nothing about Lorien or the island, but about the things I like. Arepas, movies, books, arcades. And Ethan looks fascinated. It turns out he's a movie buff. He's waxing on about a long list of films I should have seen when I suddenly start to wonder how I managed to end up in a fancy Miami restaurant talking movies with some high-ranking criminal mastermind. What would Ray say? I wish he were here. I wish he could see how well I was doing on my own. How important I'm becoming. Emma is always hungry for more, wanting bigger and better assignments. Eventually, we get one. Ethan wants a series of warehouses bugged to keep tabs on competitors or something like that. As usual, we don't ask questions. Emma and I are supposed to sneak in at night when the buildings are empty and plant a few tiny devices Ethan has supplied us with. It's an extremely simple task. So, of course, everything goes wrong. Emma and I split up to get the work done, and I'm halfway through planting the bugs in a small warehouse filled with row upon row of boxes and shelves when a dozen guys show up. If I lived in a superhero movie, they'd be stereotypical henchmen. I say as they form a half circle around me. Hi. I was just looking for a place to sleep tonight. I'll move along and...
Ethan sent you, didn't he?
One of the men asks. Ethan? I ask. Who's that? The man answers by throwing a punch at me. At first, the rudimentary training Ray had given me during hand-to-hand fighting comes in handy. But I'm rusty and was never really that good at it to begin with. And there are just so many of them. I dodge a few punches, and then a fist lands in my gut, and I crumple. Then I'm on the ground, kicks coming from every direction, my vision sparking as someone's heel meets the back of my head. They can't kill me. There are still two guards standing between me and death. But they can break me, incapacitate me, send me to the emergency room, or abduct me. I only have one chance of getting out of this. Telekinetic energy erupts from my body, sending all the attackers sprawling backwards. I don't give anyone a chance to recover. I use my legacy to send them flying into walls and one another, lifting them into the air and then slamming them down onto the concrete. I lash out and use my powers in ways I never imagined. It's strange how naturally it comes to me, this destruction. It feels so good. Like I'm stretching a muscle I haven't used in a while. I realize that I miss using my telekinesis so often, like I had on my little island, or when I was first picking pockets. Bodies fly all around the room, crashing into shelves and lights until someone calls my name, and I freeze. Emma. I turn to see her standing in one of the open loading bay doors, half silhouetted by the moonlight. She makes no move to come forward. There's a look on Emma's face I've never seen before. Her eyes are wide, the whites standing out in the near darkness. Her hands are shaking. She's terrified. Around me, all the attackers fall from the air, hitting the ground with thuds. Emma, I say, stepping towards her. She takes a step back.
What are you? How did you?
She says. Her eyes fall on someone lying a few yards away from me.
Marcus?
She asks, and then she's running towards him. He doesn't respond when she shakes him, and tears start to fill her eyes. It takes me a moment to figure out why I know the name Marcus, and then it clicks. I hadn't immediately recognized the name because she usually just calls him her brother. Marcus appears to be alive, but his leg is twisted in a way that I know means it's broken. He's probably cracked a few ribs from the drop in the air, too. What have I done?
I'm sorry,
I start, but I'm cut off by Emma's glare, one of pure hatred.
You monster, she says. You fucking freak. Are you possessed? How did you do this?
I take a step forward, but she's on her feet, a pipe from one of the shelves I knocked down in her hands.
Emma, don't you take another step closer.
It's okay, I say. It's me, Cody. She shakes her head. Or maybe it's just trembling. It's hard to say. At her feet, her brother gurgles something unintelligible. I take another step forward.
Let me help you.
And then she swings. The pipe connects with the side of my head, and everything goes black. When I wake up, I'm in a car. A really nice car. All gray leather and touchscreens. A man in a suit drives. I sit in the back passenger seat. Ethan sits beside me.
Welcome back to the world of the living, he says.
My head pounds. I raise my fingers to find a throbbing knot on the side of my skull. Emma, I murmur.
It was quite the swing. You've probably got a concussion. I can have one of my doctors look at you if you feel dizzy or off.
Where is she?
She stayed behind. Apparently one of the men was her brother. She called for help. I came in as soon as I heard there was trouble and took you. Didn't want you getting hurt more, or arrested, or anything like that.
I nod my head a little, but that just makes it hurt more. The pain makes it difficult to piece together everything that's just happened. 100 different places on my body hurt. My white t-shirt is stained with drops of blood. My lower chest. There's a thump in my heart when I think of it. I look around the car. My dirty duffel bag sits at my feet on the floorboard. I reach for it, frantically ripping back the cover. The chest is still there. I exhale. Ethan continues.
So you have a few tricks up your sleeve you hadn't bothered to tell me about. No wonder the two of you were so good at the jobs I gave you.
She didn't know, I say. I regret the words immediately. They're an accidental admission of truth, that I do have powers, that I'm different. But he knows that already. He saw what I did just as clearly as Emma did.
Ah, that explains her reaction.
A monster, she called me. I thought she was my friend. I stare out the window, unsure of where we're going. Maybe I should just roll down the window and fly out into the night, find some other place to go, start over again. Maybe it's time I finally do go back to Canada. A question forms in my sore head. Is this what my life is going to be like now? Moving from place to place with no idea of what I'm supposed to be doing? No way to find the other guard? No way the guard are going to find me? If they're even looking for me? I could cause a scene or show off my powers, but the Moogs would probably have me killed before the guard ever came out of hiding. I wish there was another way.
What were you to her? Partners? Friends? More than that?
I roll this question around in my head for a moment, trying to see what he's getting at. Friends, I say. I mean, I think we were.
A friend wouldn't have reacted as she did, Cody.
He says, leaning back into his seat.
A friend wouldn't have turned her back on you. I hate to say this, but I think it's possible that Emma has been riding on your coattails, trying to get anything out of you that she could. Using you.
I start to protest, but he raises a hand, stopping me from speaking.
Do you know what you are to me? I shake my head slowly. An employee? I ask. Potential, Ethan says. Raw power. I am not a fool. I know talent when I see it, and I respect it. I've been all around the world. I've seen some pretty crazy, unexplainable stuff in my day. Stuff you wouldn't believe even if I swore an oath on everything I hold dear and holy. I've seen men in Indonesia who can tell you your darkest secrets. Women in the Caribbean who can resurrect animals. Nothing surprises me. You don't have to tell me about yourself or your history. But you don't have to hide anything either. I'll never look at you like you're a freak. Whatever power or gifts you have, it means you're stronger than most people, right? It means you're someone who is going to endure, to survive. And that's why you're here now.
He gestures back and forth between us.
We have a lot to offer each other. If we worked together, we'd be unstoppable.
What about Emma? I murmur.
Emma has a family. Her foolish brother, yes, but parents and a home as well. You, on the other hand, are alone, aren't you?
What makes you think that?
Cody, I run a very tight ship when it comes to my business. I do thorough background checks on everyone I work with. You, my boy, have been something of an anomaly.
It occurs to me that he hasn't seemed shocked at all by anything that's happened, my powers or Emma's leaving. You've been following me.
You need to work on your stealth.
Ethan pushes his dark hair back behind his ears.
That's something I can teach you. And from the looks of it, you could use quite a bit of hand-to-hand combat training as well. But most important is that ability you seem to have. You can move things around just by waving your hands.
Telekinesis, I say. What am I doing? I should go. Should jump out of the car and disappear into the darkness. But Ethan already knows. And I suddenly realize he's the only friend I have now. The way Emma looked at me. I know there's no going back to her now. I'd be surprised if she ever talked to me again. Besides, all this talk of training, maybe this is actually a really good thing. Ethan is obviously a powerful man. If he can train me to be like him, I can use that later. I mean, I can always leave, right?
People like you and me are different, Cody, Ethan says. You're special. I knew it the moment I met you on the beach. I could tell that you were the talented one of your little duo. You're powerful, but I can help you become someone that people truly admire and respect. Would you like that?
Yes, I say. I don't even really have to think about it.
Good,
he says with a smile.
We have a bright future ahead of us.
The driver turns towards a towering wrought iron gate. It parts, exposing a long driveway leading up to a house that looks like something out of a movie about Hollywood millionaires. What is this place? I ask.
Your new home,